We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace on IndySportsLegends.com. I'm your host, Alex Golden, and on today's episode, I'm going to be joined by the one and only Michael Grady to talk about Victor Oladipo and the coaching search. So, MG, as we get into things, I saw a tweet that you put out here talking about the Pacers should basically rebuild and not necessarily just try to patch that hole. So I want to hear a little bit more about that tweet that you put out, and I want you to explain what you mean and what the Pacers should do going forward.
Well, first off, it has to be a conversation between Pritch and Oladipo. And if Oladipo truly doesn't want to be here, then you have to help him get out of town. You know, I can't think of any fan base that would, you know, tolerate a guy who openly says he doesn't want to be in a situation or be in a place. And then you have the job of trying to convince him to stay. Please stay. Please don't leave. That's not how you want to have your organization flow. So if he says he wants out, then you help him get out. You don't try to convince him to stay or say, hey, can we do this, that, or the other. You do that in Milwaukee if you're talking about Giannis Antetokounmpo, but mm-hmm. You don't do that. And even Giannis hasn't said that he wants to leave or go anywhere. He just wants to win a championship, and he wants the type of people around him to help him win. With Victor Oladipo, it's just kind of a, you know, from the reports, you know, I think it's time to move on. The thing that I am trying to be vocal about in conversations, though, is, and we may never get this, you know, it took years before we found out why Paul George was frustrated and wanted to leave Indiana abruptly after saying at that celebrity softball game that he wanted to bring a championship to Indiana. Mm-hmm. It took a few years for that to come out. And that was, well, look, I wanted to bring, yeah, there was a certain talented power forward, Anthony Davis, who wanted to come to Indiana. And I was basically told by management that they could not get it done. Now, that roster wasn't great around Paul, and it would have been incredibly difficult to get him to Anthony Davis to Indiana. But from Paul's standpoint, they just didn't want to spend the money. Mm-hmm. So it took years to get that information. Why is it that Victor Oladipo, if the reports are true, saying that he wants out? Is it a similar frustration? Is it something completely different? You know, I share in anybody's frustration in terms of wanting clarity and may not be able to get it. And, you know, the fan base has been, you know, faithful for a very long time. And I've talked about how impressive it's been that the organization has been able to continue to stay relevant and compete at a high level without going through a complete rebuild, finding gems in the draft without having a lottery pick. However, one thing is abundantly clear, and it's been clear for a long time, that if you want to win championships, you need to have stars. You need to at least have, you know, you need to have stars and difference makers. And it's very difficult to get that in a small market and bring those through free agency. And so the way to do it is through the draft. And so if Victor says he wants out, and Victor has looked nowhere near 100% last time we saw him, and you're not going to get really great value for him because of the question marks about his health and what is his feeling, you know, once he says that he is full strength. Because of all those question marks, you're not going to get great value. Peak Paul George got you Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, who we didn't know would develop into all-stars. We knew there was talent there, but we didn't know at the time. That's why there was so much criticism is, wait a minute, this is what you get for Paul? This is what you get? So if that's what you got for Paul, never mind the fact that it worked out and they became all-stars, but if that's what you got for Paul, then what are you realistically going to get for Victor Oladipo? Now, if you pair Victor with the Miles, then you test the market and see what you can get in return. But if you're not going to get great value in return, then we're talking about the same kind of thing for Indiana. You know, pretty good, you know, but not necessarily competing for an Eastern Conference title. So that's where the frustration comes in, at least from a fan standpoint. And that's really what I was speaking to, that if they're really going to make a difference, you know, if you're really going to make a difference, you may have to get bad to get really good.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's kind of funny because when I look at the Pacers organization and how they've gone about their business, they've never tanked. And we suffered through many years of watching Troy Murphy, Mike Dunleavy, and, you know, Rocho Nesterovich out on the court. You know, it was some bad Pacers teams.
That was for a different reason. That was they were scared of the hip hop image, if you will, or the finger quote thug image from the era that preceded it. So, okay, wow, we got Steven Jackson. Oh, my God. We got Jamal Tinsley, Ron Artest. Oh, my goodness. Let's bring in the most clean image guys that we can bring to Indiana, and you get Troy Murphy and Mike Dunleavy. Was that equal value for the guys that you traded? No. But from an image standpoint, it did the job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I get that.
Thank goodness that Danny Granger came in and helped bridge that gap and then led to the Paul George era, which was a lot of fun. You know, it was certainly a lot of fun, but it was more of the same because you still ended up losing to franchises, or specifically Miami in that case, that had the multiple stars, and it's just hard to compete.
Yeah. So, well, let me ask you this then, because I mean, I think you definitely have said you do think they need to rebuild. So, question one is: A, do you think the Pacers will rebuild? And two, whether they do or not, what kind of rebuild would you like to see them do? Like, is that trading, you know, Brogdon and Sabonis, or is it just trying to trade some of the other pieces to, you know, get younger? I'm just curious how you would approach this rebuild if you were the one calling the shots.
Yeah, look, you can't get rid of, you know, everybody to begin the rebuild. But the fact that I'm saying it versus what they may end up doing, like, in my opinion, this should happen. But given history, which, you know, I'm well aware of, it's just something that they haven't done. It's something that they won't do. And at what point will, you know, people speak up and say, kind of tired of, you know, going through this same cycle? Like, we get it. This is what you do. But man, it would be nice if we were willing to have deeper, you know, pockets. And look, it's not my money, but still, at the same time, if the goal is to win a championship, then what do you need to do to win a championship?
Yeah.
You know, so these players are all sacrificing and doing what they need to do to elevate their play, add different pieces to their game, going out there, competing, putting it all on the line from a competitive standpoint to gain an edge on the opposition so that they can put their team in the best position to succeed.
Yeah.
And management in terms of, you know, Pritch and working with his budget is doing everything within his power and the parameters that he's allowed to operate in to put the best pieces out there for the team, to put them in the best position to succeed. And so from ownership, are they doing the same thing? Is ownership doing the exact same thing? They've done so much. They've been tremendous to the community. You know, we could have lost the Pacers a long time ago, and that's not to begrudge or dismiss any of that. I'm talking strictly though for the sacrifice if the goal is to win a championship as opposed to I'm cool with where we're at. And so I just want it to be known from a player standpoint and guys who have moved on, has their frustration with Indiana been the fact that they won't spend the money to bring in the proper pieces to compete for a championship? And if that's the case, then a rebuild, in my opinion, is necessary, even though that's something that they're reluctant to do. So if it's a rebuild, look, you bring in a coach. There was never going to be a coach that was going to get you over the hump with this roster. Mm-hmm. So when I say get a young up-and-coming coach or a bright-minded coach or a, you know, someone along those lines, even if it's a Kenny Atkinson, who is an amazing player development coach, amazing with young guys, is terrific when it comes to connecting with his guys and caring about his guys. And I think he has a very effective offensive strategy, right? Right. So if you're moving in a direction of a rebuild, let's just say somebody like Kenny Atkinson or an up-and-coming, you know, assistant who has a bright offensive mind and player development being extremely important, that's the type of guy that I would bring in because, you know, it's been a while since we've talked about somebody that has developed in a way that it's like, whoa, you know, TJ Warren put that work in himself, you know, during the quarantine. And we always known that he was a guy that can get buckets. And then he just went otherworldly during those seeding games. But I would, you know, if Miles is saying the same thing, he wants to go, well, that makes it easy. You know, Victor Oladipo, Miles Turner, you know, see if you can get younger. With Brogdon, he may not want to be in this situation. You may not make that move right away, but you see how he does with younger guys in a different-looking roster. You know, at his peak, he is an efficient three-point shooter. I love Sabonis, and Sabonis is my mom's favorite player. So I'm gonna tell you right now, I'd love for him to stick around. But to have some 3-point shooters on the roster, I think we're seeing in this postseason that if you are an effective 3-point shooting team, and we've seen it for a while now, and you can't just go crazy like the Houston Rockets. But to have a Duncan Robinson on your roster, a Tyler Hero, and other guys on the Miami Heat, who you have to worry about is effective 3-point shooters, paired with a Bam Adebayo who gets easy twos, a Jimmy Butler who is as effective as anybody in the league in terms of drawing contact, getting easy twos or getting to the free throw line. It's a perfect marriage there. So I think you start with Miles and you start with Victor Oladipo, and instead of what's this veteran I can bring in, unless somebody knocks your socks off.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. If there's somebody out there and the team is like, oh, I'll give you this guy for Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo, I'm not saying turn that down. That, you know, something interesting and unexpected could happen if someone takes the bait on a Victor Oladipo who hasn't proven that he can get back to 100% and a Miles Turner. But even then, if a team with championship aspirations is saying, I'll take those two guys on, and they're willing to give up one of those stars. Well, the star that you're going to get is probably tainted himself. Mm. If you trade those two and it's for draft picks, well, Victor Oladipo and Miles will help that squad get to a level where we're talking about a pick, what, in the 20s? Right?
Yeah.
So the goal is to, and from my standpoint, if I, you know, if it were me, would be to trade those guys to a squad that can give you some draft picks, where those draft picks would be, you know, reasonable, that you can package with your own draft picks perhaps to move even higher in a draft if you needed to. So that's really the direction that I would go with that.
So basically the only teams that kind of make sense are someone like the New York Knicks, who believe that if they can get a star in Oladipo. Because, I mean, really, I don't think any other team that's, you know, tanking right now or rebuilding is going to want to trade for a one-year rental in Victor Oladipo, which kind of makes sense to me as, like, why a Brooklyn or a Milwaukee or, I mean, even Miami, but I don't really know if they would trade for him at this point. But you got to think, like, teams that are, like, maybe, like, missing that third star, because even when Oladipo was himself in 17-18, I don't think you could say this Pacers team, as it's constructed now, was a championship-level team, even with Victor being that player he was 2 years ago. And now he's far removed from that, and we've yet to see what he can be. So that's my biggest conundrum is like, well, what kind of package are you going to get back for him? Number one, he's already got, you know, taken all the leverage away from the Pacers saying he wants out. And so now it's basically teams that are like, hey, we want that third star. We'd be, you know, we're calling the trade for him. So we threw out trade ideas yesterday on our podcast. And one of the trade ideas centered around, you know, someone you're very close to, Caris LeVert in Brooklyn. Would the Nets be willing to, you know, trade Caris LeVert for a Victor Oladipo to pair with a Kyrie and a Kevin Durant, something like that? Does that make sense? Or should they go in a different direction, like you mentioned, maybe like someone like the Knicks who believes they can rebuild with an Oladipo, but they've got plenty of draft capital after they've made some trades that have given them first-round picks from both Dallas and the Clippers?
I'll say this. It would have to take a wow factor offer to lure to entice the Brooklyn Nets to part ways with Caris LeVert.
Okay.
Caris LeVert on the Nets, you know, they're looking at potentially being a third star. The only issue with Caris LeVert in terms of how he may mix and gel with the Brooklyn Nets next season with a healthy Kyrie and a healthy Kevin Durant is the fact that he is at his best when he is controlling the rock. He's not a great off-the-ball player. When he's playing like a point guard and bringing the ball up and kind of dictating the flow, it's much easier for him to attack as opposed to being off the ball and watching the point guard do his thing. So so Kyrie is most effective when he's handling the rock. Kevin Durant loves to handle the rock himself too. So you have three guys who at their best, and Kevin is a chameleon. He can do whatever he wants. He's one of the best in the game. But nevertheless, you have three guys who really are at their best when they're controlling the rock. So that's why people are saying, what do you do? Like, Caris is great, but maybe you bring him off the bench, and that way he can be, you know, control the flow with that second unit. You have a dynamic guy who can be sixth man of the year with that second unit, and he doesn't have to necessarily share the ball with guys like Kyrie and Kevin, unless it's a finish the game in the fourth quarter type of situation. That's Caris's role on the Nets. On another team, Caris is a star. And the Nets know that. So on the Brooklyn Nets, given how deep they are, Caris might be a guy who's coming off the bench. But if you trade him to Indiana, well, now he's rivaling Domantas Sabonis as the best player on the roster and the guy that you're going to give it to in the clutch moments to finish off a team. And he'd be that guy for a number of teams in the NBA. So from the Nets standpoint, it has to be a wow offer because they know the type of talent that Caris LeVert has. And frankly, the NBA knows after seeing what he did in the seeding games with basically guys that aren't necessarily household names playing alongside him.
Mm-hmm.
So trading a Caris LeVert, a peak Caris LeVert, who in the bubble was playing out of his mind, to trade him for a Victor Oladipo, where it's, what does Victor have? Like, what is, you know what I mean? Can Victor get to Victor? Can what, you know, what? The ceiling, you know, looks very different for both guys right now. So that's why I would be skeptical of that particular move. If it's a and then, you know, a Miles Turner even being, you know, thrown into it too, I don't think is sexy enough for the Brooklyn Nets, just speaking from their perspective. Anything can happen, who knows, but it would need to be a wow offer for the Nets to part ways with Caris LeVert. So to me, again, I think it's draft picks, you get younger, you get shooters, you kind of get a entertaining stuff, you adopt an entertaining brand of basketball, a creative brand of basketball that's centered around the direction that the league is going in with 3-point shooting. You develop your culture, and you just, and because, you know, looking at the Eastern, I know things change from year to year, but some of the windows for some of these teams that are out there is not necessarily outside of, you know, Boston, which has young talent and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. People feel like they'll eventually figure it out. But, you know, the longevity for some of these teams, who knows? Giannis could leave and go to the Western Conference in a year, or he could be traded during the season. The Brooklyn Nets, you know, who knows if this marriage is going to be long-term between Kyrie and Kevin. We know about the injury issues with, you know, Kyrie Irving. We don't know how long this could potentially last. With the Toronto Raptors, they could get broken up this offseason.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The Miami Heat, Tyler Hero looks like a guy who's going to have longevity. Bam Adebayo is going to be a guy who has longevity. But some of the other pieces around him, Dragic will be, you know, on the move perhaps soon. How many years is he going to be there? And then Jimmy Butler, man, we've been talking about his mileage on his body for a long time. So look, this is a perfect time for a culture change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one guy that we haven't talked about yet is, you know, TJ Warren, and he still has a lot to prove. You know, he went on a tear in the bubble. And I want to see the continued work this offseason, because when Miami devised the game plan to take him out the game, they took him out the game.
Yeah.
So no. How do you got to look at tape and figure out, okay, how do I counter that? When they do this, I need to do this. When they do this, I need to be looking to pass in this particular situation. I didn't see this guy open. Or in this situation, I should have gone to my left here. I should have done that. And then you spend hours and hours in the gym, and then we'll see the fruits of that labor next season. Some guys put in that work, some guys don't. But it's too early to say, I know what TJ Warren is going to be long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one thing that the Pacer fans cling to is how well they played this season without Oladipo. And, you know, how they were still competing with the top of the Eastern Conference. Now, of course, Brooklyn was without, you know, Kyrie and Durant, and that, you know, two-headed monster, that could be a big problem and will be a big problem next year if everything goes right. So I just think going forward, it's going to be hard to figure things out, especially with Oladipo.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the only thing that I have a question about is, I know we talked about you got to trade him in the offseason, you know, before the season starts. That's probably the ideal situation, so you don't have to deal with that, you know, elephant in the room all season long. But if Oladipo can prove before the trade deadline, hey, look, I'm, you know, back to, you know, at least a lot better than I was in the bubble, maybe he could get more value. You could get more value in return for him. But I know from talking with Jay Michael, there was a lot of chemistry issues in the locker room with Oladipo, causing some uncertainty.
There were.
So it's frustrating to figure out.
Yeah. In an ideal world, if this stuff wasn't public about him thinking it may be a good idea to move on, maybe you could figure some stuff out. But I'm a firm believer in terms of chemistry within a locker room. Mm-hmm. And I heard about those rumblings about things not being right in the locker room. So now you have an offseason where it becomes public that Victor Oladipo thinks it may be time to move on. And then you're going to invite that energy in the locker room with the goal of, okay, if he can prove himself, then we'll ship him. Well, everybody's going to know that. Brogdon, who's committed to the franchise, is going to know that. Sabonis, who's committed to the franchise, is going to know that. Everybody on that roster is going to know, yeah, this probably isn't going to be long term. Mm-hmm. So what does that do with the compete level of everybody knowing that this situation is only temporary? Like that's not good locker room energy. That's not good locker room synergy. And I just wouldn't do it, even though it may benefit the franchise to showcase Victor being 100%. Because I still think it stunts the growth of a lot of guys on that roster, because everybody understands it's a temporary situation. And everybody's saying that, you know, look, they played better without Victor Oladipo last season. As you mentioned the Nets, you know, there were stretches where the Nets played better without Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm.
But are the Nets better without a 100% Kyrie Irving? No. Are the Pacers better without a 100% Victor Oladipo? No. Absolutely not. So it's I understand it's like a convenient argument for people looking at the records, but without Victor Oladipo, you're still a team that gets beat potentially in the first round of the NBA playoffs. With mm-hmm. Victor Oladipo, with him not being 100%, you were a team that was beaten in the first round of the NBA playoffs. We're not talking about mediocrity. We're not talking about, well, we were a better mediocre team, you know, without Victor Oladipo. We're talking about getting to the next level and what it takes to get to the next level. And to get to the next level, you need stars. Okay. So that's, That's where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. And so there are so many things at play when it comes to, you know, competing without a guy. And chemistry and on-court chemistry is so important. So if you have guys that have been playing together for a long stretch, competing together for a long stretch, they're developing chemistry, understanding their roles and how they need to compete, TJ Warren doesn't have to do so much deferring. He's the guy. Malcolm Brogdon has a different role. You play a number of games, 10, 15, 20 games, you're getting into a rhythm as a group. Victor Oladipo comes back. He's not 100%. You want to help him get into the rhythm. TJ Warren gets the shot. If Victor Oladipo's not there, there's no hesitation. I'm going to be aggressive and do this. Victor Oladipo's there. I have to give him this look. You're deferring now. It messes up the chemistry and it messes up the roles. Minutes change. All these different things change. And he's not 100%. So guys who are competing and locked in and zoned in are now getting adjusted to a guy that they customarily would defer to. And the guy that they're deferring to is still not 100% and definitely not in rhythm. That definitely affects games. So I don't cater to the argument of, well, they were better without him. Well, there are a lot of factors at play as to why you're better without him. A lot of factors at play. And still, at the end of the day, you're still a team that gets beaten the first round of the NBA playoffs as it stands right now.
Right. And I think a lot of fans know that. They know that this team is a good but not great team, and we've talked about it a lot here on our podcast, how they have a lot of 7.5 out of 10 players, but not those nine level, 10 level players that are gonna, you know, take you over the hump. So, I guess as we kind of transition here, before I let you go here, MG, I got to talk about the coaching vacancy. They let Nate McMillan go, who, you know, I was in agreement with you on your stance on it. You know, he didn't really deserve to be fired because of the seasons that he's had. He's had really good regular season success, and he only had 1 year left, so it didn't make a whole lot of sense to just make a drastic move. With Sabonis not playing in the playoffs and Oladipo being out last year, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they didn't have great playoff success. But anyway, they move on from him, and now trying to find that right voice is going to be key. You mentioned Kenny Atkinson as a player developer, but his name's not even been mentioned in any of the reports with having any interviews with the Pacers. So I've been kind of intrigued by that. The name that keeps coming around a lot, it's not Mike D'Antoni, it's actually Chauncey Billups. And that kind of makes sense, and we've kind of decided here that that's the guy we kind of want to see here, just because of his relationships with players being, you know, talked about with Malcolm, Victor, and Miles. But surprisingly, two of those players are possibly on the move this offseason, so kind of interesting there. Sure. But I mean, what kind of coach do you think the Pacers need, and is there a name out there besides Kenny that you think makes a lot of sense for this franchise going forward?
Well, I mentioned before in interviews, it's not that I have strong reservations about Chauncey. It's just that I would feel a lot better if I had an understanding of his offensive philosophy. And so in Brooklyn, you know, Steve Nash coming in, you know, doesn't have the coaching, you know, background as far as being an assistant or anything along those lines. However, he spent a lot of time with the Golden State Warriors, 4 years, in fact. We know Steve Kerr's offensive philosophy. We know Steve Kerr's influences as far as coming from that Greg Popovich tree. And so, hold on 1 second. Yeah, coming from that Greg Popovich tree. And so even though it will be somewhat, he'll put his own stamp on the type of offense that he is going to run in Brooklyn, I feel like I have an idea of what we could see with the Steve Nash offense. Of course, he comes from the D'Antoni tree as well, and all those type of influences with Chauncey Billups. You know, those offenses that I remember Chauncey Billups being in, slow.
Yeah.
You know, and if you haven't been on a bench, and I can't say, oh, he was an assistant with Greg Popovich for these years, or, oh, he was an assistant with such and such, or, oh, he spent time with this coach. You know, I can't say that. So I don't have a really strong assessment of what a Chauncey Billups-led offense would look like. Tough, defensive-minded? Absolutely. But from an offensive standpoint, I have no idea. And so I wouldn't call it a reservation, just that I would feel a lot better in general, though, if I knew his influences. One of the reasons that I speak up for Kenny Atkinson is because he is a terrific player development guy. I saw so many guys blossom and develop with Kenny Atkinson's hands-on approach. It's really ridiculous. He revitalized D'Angelo Russell's career. He played a big role in Caris LeVert taking his game to an entirely different level. Brook Lopez as a three-point shooter, that happened under Kenny Atkinson. Brook took it to an entirely different level, but that him taking his game inside out happened with Kenny Atkinson. Jared Allen's growth as a basketball player was under Kenny Atkinson. Joe Harris going from a guy who was an afterthought to three-point champion, leading the league in three-point percentage, that all happened with Kenny Atkinson. So from a player development standpoint, Kenny is superb. Chris Quinn with the Miami Heat, coming from that system, Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, that kind of influence, is another guy that I'm keeping my eye on, who may get a solid opportunity this offseason. And coming from that coaching tree and seeing that team in the NBA Finals, you know, right now, I mean, it's been impressive what they've been able to do. And I'm sure those influences are, certainly rub off to where he's going to get an opportunity as a head coach. And so young guy, bright mind, he's going to get an opportunity for sure as a head coach in this league. So there are other folks out there, but somebody who's young, bright, aggressive, a great communicator, which is extremely important in this league, someone who can relate, makes an effort to relate to the guys, because being a psychologist, part-time psychologist, is extremely important in terms of managing personalities and egos and things like that. But just having a clear-cut plan in terms of what you want to execute offensively and what your philosophy is going to be is extremely, extremely important, because we've had question marks about that for years with these Pacer teams.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the Pacers are going to take their time, obviously, with this coaching decision, because they have both been rumored to talk with Dan Craig and Chris Quinn with Miami, and they're in the NBA Finals, and they're in the bubble, so they can't have that one-on-one interview. So I think that's why a lot of people are like, man, are they going to make a decision? But it's like, you got to wait a little bit, because with COVID, with everything going around like it is, you have to wait to have those face-to-face interviews, and they're not going to be able to do that till later. So it's really interesting to see what happens. But are you surprised at all, though, that Kenny Atkinson's name has not been, you know, linked with any of the other names for the Pacers coaching search?
I guess to a certain degree, yes.
Yeah.
I think to a certain degree, yes. I think there are bigger fish. You may be getting headlines. You know, on one hand, it's D'Antoni, and he was the whole talk for sure. And, you know, Tyronn Lue with Philadelphia and him being a big name that's out there, then Billy Donovan, oh my God, that surprise, you know, and his name being available before going to Chicago, and then now Doc Rivers is the big fish in the sea. You know, some of these smaller names, and we're just not seeing that many rumblings. I'm sure Kenny wants to get back into it and coach. He's a hardworking guy who doesn't get much sleep, and he loves being on the floor, and he loves teaching and coaching. So I know he definitely wants to get out there, and I hope he gets an opportunity wherever it may be.
Yeah, I predict that he'll go to the Thunder, but we'll see what happens there. Just kind of makes sense with their young point guard and Shea and what they do.
But their development, yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that fit a lot for him. But all right, MG, well, I think that wraps everything up on the Pacers side. And real quick before I let you go, your thoughts on this Colts 2-1 record. They beat up some pretty bad teams in the NFL, but they've looked pretty good in doing so. So what are your overall thoughts over these last three games?
Yeah, other than the Jacksonville game, they've done exactly what they needed to do. Jacksonville crapped the bed. They weren't ready. Didn't look sharp. One thing that you do understand, though, especially from an offensive standpoint, that over time that chemistry will develop. I don't think he's developed great chemistry even with T.Y. Hilton just yet. And so all those things are going to come with time. So being, you know, inefficient, off the mark a little bit offensively in that first game, some of it was somewhat expected. At the same time, they still should have won that football game. There are a lot of other things that went wrong, like making Gardner Minshew look like Joe Montana. But the following week, you know, they play so well against Minnesota that I believe Kirk Cousins got negative fantasy points. And so they did their job and went above and beyond in that particular game and basically made the Vikings quit from my perspective in watching that game. Yeah. So that was impressive to see. And then the following week, getting the job done, just another impressive performance, doing what they needed to do against a team that I believe is the worst in the league.
Yeah.
So this next offering, though, against Chicago will be a great, great test in terms of where this team is at. And there'll be other tests moving forward. But Nick Foles really got that Bears offense in a groove against the Falcons, which was, you know, really impressive to see. That defense with Chicago is legit. They're playing confident. They feel like they can come back from any deficit because they've done so twice already this season. And so that'll be more of a measuring stick. I think it's great. People are talking about, hey, number one, this defensively in the league, this defensively, that defensively. I don't really get caught up in all of that because of who they've played so far. There'll be better quarterbacks and better offenses coming down the road, and then we can get a better assessment. But as of right now, I say credit, you know, these last 2 weeks at least, you've done what you were supposed to do.
Absolutely. Well, MG, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I know that you've got a busy schedule, and whenever the Pacers do end up making trades, if they make them, which I assume they will, but you never know, if they do make those trades, we'd love to have you back on and talk about those trades and those moves.
Sounds good. Appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again, Grady. All right, everybody. That does it for another episode here of Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Golden. You can follow me on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA, and you can follow us on Twitter at SettingThePace3. And until next time, peace out, Pacer Nation.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.